Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time listening to the Guelph Politicast, welcome. Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference, or are just making life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today I talked to John Leacock, one of the members of the Guelph Black Heritage Society. Next week, BHS will be kicking off a fundraiser to collect $47,000 for a new accessible entrance to Heritage Hall, the old British Methodist Episcopal Church at 83 Essex Street. It currently serves as a cultural, historical, and social community center, which is operated by BHS. So we'll talk about the big dreams for Heritage Hall and Guelph's fascinating Black history coming up on this week's Guelph Politicast. But first, my usual public service announcement. Guelph Politico is crowdfunded through Patreon, where you can contribute on a per-monthly basis of any amount you feel comfortable using PayPal or your credit card, and all that money goes to maintaining a locally sourced independent media outlet in Guelph called Guelph Politico. Through generous donations, you'll be paying to keep the Politicast going, as well as regular coverage of City Council and politics in and around and concerning the Royal City. For more details, click on the giant orange P on the right-hand side of the Guelph Politico page, or go to patreon.com/GuelphPolitico. And now on with the show. John Graves Simcoe, while also being known as a guy that established English Canada, can also take a decent share of the credit for helping to end slavery in North America. As United Empire loyalists fled the newly established United States, they were followed by slaves looking for freedom, and they made their way to the Queen's Bush, where a thriving black community started to develop after the beginning of the 19th century. But on their way to North Wellington, Guelph became a stop along the Underground Railroad, and by the middle of the 19th century, those former slaves started to settle in the area around the British Methodist Episcopal Church, which was just outside of the town center on Essex Street. The current church that sits at 83 Essex is not that church. The present structure was built in the 1880s, but it is in the spirit of that original building that the Black Heritage Society has tried to reclaim its place and its history by making the old BME Church, now Heritage Hall, a gathering place for all those that need a safe space. And that's why they're trying to raise $47,000 for a new accessible entrance and ramp to the building. On November 4th, Guelph Black Heritage is kicking off its fundraising campaign with a celebration at E-Bar, with music by The Things and DJ Charles Jarzen. Tickets are $10 in advance or $15 at the door. In this week's Politicast, I talked to John Leacock, who not only helped save the BME Church and turn it into a growing community center, but is also part of the efforts to take that center further and make the Heritage Hall the true safe space that it was always meant to be, and now for a modern age. I talked to him about Guelph's black history, the efforts to preserve it, and his ambitious plans for the Heritage Hall. I caught up with John Leacock at Heritage Hall on Essex Street. So John Leacock, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Before we get started on the organization itself, how did you get involved with Black Heritage Society?
Well, I've been in Guelph since about 1987 as an international student, and I ended up living in Guelph. I came from Trinidad and Tobago. And I always knew about this BME Church, the British Methodist Episcopal Church, and it was run by the BME Church on a regular basis over the years. Myself, growing up in the Caribbean, I was also a Methodist too. Mm-hmm. You know, my name, John Wesley, my mom was, you know, which is the founding, you know, John and Charles Wesley, which was known, if you understand the history of the Methodist Church, they were well popular in the Caribbean for their lively music, and it was also a safe place for slaves to go and congregate.
Methodists were very abolitionists.
Yeah, they were abolitionists. Yeah, exactly. So, and there was, you know, there was a lot of music and dancing and togetherness. So coming to Guelph, I used to come to this church a little bit, and then, you know, I just knew about it, and things changed a bit with everything, and back in 2011, I got a call from a fellow realtor telling me, hey, John, you should know this, the BME Church is up for sale. So there was a sign, because what was happening was that there were some difficulties going on within the BME Church of Canada, mm-hmm. and they were digressing themselves from owning the real estate of right. churches, and a lot of these churches were destination churches for the Underground Railroad. You know, there's one in Buxton, there's one up in Owensong that they had to get rid of. Mm-hmm. And in this particular case, unfortunately, this church came up as one that they had to sell. Right. So, you know, myself, Wayne Smythe, Jonathan Ball, Kevin Sutton, who is a well-known spoken word artist here in Guelph, and others came together. Kevin did a wicked YouTube video, and we said, you know what, we got to save this church. Because the thing about the church, like if you know real estate law, the zoning of this church is residential. Right. So it could have been easily purchased by somebody that wanted to turn it into a home.
Right.
And we, you know, at the time there was 40 offers, and we offered them whatever it takes. our offer did not have a price on it. I don't think people knew that. Our offer was whatever it takes to get it.
Your offer was a blank check.
Yeah, it was a blank check. And at the time we had zero money, I'm being honest with you. But we got national recognition for what we were trying to do by, you know, both local and national media. And we were able to secure the services of a local lawyer who volunteered his time to work on our behalf, Mr. Charles Davidson, to help us with putting together the offer in a proper way once we got their attention. And we also was able to secure funds. So at this time, we didn't have an organization. We just had a group of revolutionaries coming together saying, you know what, you know, this can't happen in Guelph. Because we knew the history. I knew a few people, you know, from who were descendants of Underground Railroad blacks that moved here. So we guys from the Caribbean with a completely different history, but understanding the importance of preserving local black history. Mm-hmm. And that's basically how we came together. And we formed the organization to purchase. And like I said, somebody came in and donated the funds for us to make the deposit on the church initially and to also purchase the church, you know, with a qualifying mortgage.
Right. And this church in particular wasn't part of that, the Underground Railroad system. It came afterwards. I think it was 1880s this church was built.
This particular church. Mm-hmm. The destination, the location.
Right.
There was a church that was here before.
Another church, yeah.
You know, there was a wooden structure, mm-hmm. and there was a minister's quarters in the back.
Right.
Right. So I've met a guy who was born here, whose family moved from the Caribbean, and ministered at this Methodist church years ago. But the actual church itself, this physical structure,
right.
was built subsequent to by descendants of Underground Railroad parishioners that live here in Guelph, in the Essex Street area.
And it was still a sign for people who were slaves that this is a safe area for them.
Yeah, it's a safe space, yes.
It is interesting to look at black history in relation to Guelph, because I think... maybe it's just my whiteness talking, that it's not something that's immediately apparent. It's something
exactly.
that's, you know, it's something that was kind of kept maybe quiet, even in an unintentional way, again, that maybe white bias talking, before you guys got together and said, no, let's save this space. It is historically significant, even if you don't know it.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing, is that when we dug deeper and we pulled a local historian... freelance historian Jerry Prager and these guys together, who actually wrote a book on researching the Guelph families and their role in the Underground Railroad, and trying to look back at how things came together. You know, we started to get different waves of Guelph blacks coming forward. Some of them that were hiding within the hues of you know, because it was such a hush-hush thing back in the, you know, early 1900s, and you know, subsequent to these folks, a lot of them mixed into society, and there was different, you know, people that had percentages of black heritage, you know, like most of us do, like percentages of white, right? So, you know, those things made it unknown. Like, we have a volunteer, I don't want to call his name, but his family was a hush-hush sort of thing going on about not talking about it.
Right.
So what we're trying to do is to try to bring the history forward and to create history while we're doing it at the same time, you know?
It is, I mean, when you look at Guelph itself, it is, you know, there's the quilt over there, which I believe was a fundraiser.
Yeah, that was a donation, actually.
That donation.
That quilt was actually... the design of the quilt actually had some heritage significance. There was cues into the design of those quilts that helped along with the Underground Railroad.
Right.
But somebody donated it to us.
Yeah, and it makes you think. It's sort of a nice symbol for what Guelph is, because mm-hmm. Guelph had these waves. There was mm-hmm. the English and the Scottish who came here initially.
Mm-hmm.
You had significant black migration here and after the Civil War and mm-hmm. through to the beginning of the 20th century. Around the beginning of the 20th century, you had the Italian community over in the ward moving
sure.
in. And that seems to be the ideal metaphor for Guelph, is this mm-hmm. nice little quilt of various people who've come
yeah,
together in this place.
Sure. And there's also a history to be told about the ones that went back,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's part of the reason why it's so important and significant for us to protect it here now, so that people might want to retrace steps mm-hmm. in both directions of the Underground Railroad.
Right.
I mean, the Underground Railroad was one-directional. Right. You know, so now, subsequent to changes, you know, and we, you know, to find out the history as to why a significant population of blacks in Guelph did leave.
Right.
Was it because they were really welcome, or was there other opportunities? What was the social and political factors and economic factors or whatever that made them dwindle? Because there's some histories that tell me that they were over... At one point, it was up to about 10 to 12% of the Guelph population was wow. Underground Railroad direct descendant blacks back in the days when Guelph was less than 40,000 people.
Yeah.
So, you know, so where did these folks go? Was it, you know? So those are interesting histories that need to be looked at and to be understood.
Mm-hmm.
If we could find that history, you know?
That's problematic in terms of trying.
Oh yeah, well, and there's a professor by the name of Jennifer Harris.
Mm-hmm.
She just moved out from New Brunswick to University of Waterloo, and she has been going through the rolls and the censuses
right.
to see names and making connections, and she's doing some really good history on collecting. Family names.
Right.
You know, like even where the Cornerstone is, there's a black family that apparently had owned the Cornerstone building, and a lot of meetings.
Where the Cornerstone Cafe is.
The here. Cornerstone Cafe
right.
On the corner of Carden and Wyndham North.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there's some black heritage to that space that we got to find out through Jerry Prager. Mm-hmm. So we're just trying to put the pieces together and doing interviews. Back in 98, Wayne F. Smite and these folks did a social history project that collected some of the family's names and had their oral histories protected.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all available at the Guelph Civic Museum. So we collaborate with the Guelph Civic Museum every year annually, and we're looking towards having, you know, those families release some of these histories that were collected, because some of them we cannot make public
mm-hmm.
because some of these folks have passed on. So we're
right.
working with some of the local families so that they could give us access to the historical files
mm-hmm.
from that social history project that happened in 98.
Wow.
So there's a lot of stuff that we're trying to put together. That's why they're ramping it up and making the space accessible,
mm-hmm.
but make the place more known at 83 Essex here, you know, and have it a place that we could have educational programs. I visualize, you know, a school bus pulling up here at some point, and we have a display
mm-hmm.
of Guelph social history, a social history display of Guelph blacks. Heritage as part of the educational program from grade 5, 6, all the way up to grade 12, where we could engage some of the older Guelph students into learning about a part of our history. In the same way, it would be great to have in the curriculum history of the Italians and all the different waves of people that came to make Guelph what it is today.
But it sounds like this came about primarily because... Correct me if I'm wrong, but somebody called you one day and said, hey, this piece of Guelph history is about to be gone.
Exactly. It was a guy by the name, I'm going to call his name Bill Swan, a fellow realtor.
Mm-hmm.
A white Canadian guy, grew up with the Courtneys, whose family, black Canadian, whose family's been here since, 1800s. Right? They might have had some Owen Song, Aurelia, he roots too.
Right.
And they all played in this place, and they grew up here. You know, this was a church. There was a Sunday school here. So when he was calling me, he wasn't calling me because he wanted a commission. He was calling me because he wanted to make this be preserved.
Right.
So, you know, like, you know, every social movement, there's all different hues of people that come together to make things happen.
And it also seems to come about organically. I mean,
if
this hadn't been bought, perhaps there wouldn't have been the impetus to try and collect this history and try to dig deeper into it.
Yeah, it was kind of one of those things that I kind of knew, okay.
Yeah.
we really need to do something here. Like, the type of person that I am, I like to, you know, be involved in the community. Like, I was like, okay. And then when that happened, it was like, bam, we got a boogie. You know, I called my friend Wayne. I said, no, he called me too. You know, it's kind of like a spirit of a 400 years coming together. Big John, he calling me and two of us calling about the same thing.
Right.
You know?
So, you mentioned it, or so I'll bring it up, trying to make the space accessible.
Mm-hmm.
That's a not insignificant task given the age of this building.
Oh, sure.
And it's certainly far from the only building in town where accessibility mm-hmm. is an issue. I mean, this is kind of where history, I don't know how to put it, but maybe runs off the rails, is that we want people to engage in the local history, but the way these buildings were made, it's still inaccessible.
Exactly. Yeah, it's unfortunate. And you know what? There's also heritage factors. You know, we don't want to put a ramp up front.
Right.
You know, that's going to take away, you know, so the church isn't a big lot. There's a lot of room in the back to put a ramp. And like, the price that we have of $47,000, which the Ramping Up campaign is, realistically, I would love that we do a small addition off the back to include a shower and a toilet space, too, and a backstage.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, like, for performances, we have, you know, because we only have pretty much a rectangular-shaped building, but it'll be good to have a jut-out at the back with a ramp so that the place could be also fully accessible and wheelchair accessible, fully accessible for shower and thing. Because the whole thing about this place is it was a destination. It was a safe space.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, if you have refugees coming into Guelph or anybody that doesn't feel safe, they could utilize the space in short term. And the zoning would allow that. That would allow that, you know, that the space, in keeping with the history, be a destination.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of reclaiming that history.
Yeah, we got to reclaim that history. And we also was able to work around the confines of the non-profit charitable act, the federal act, to make sure that we were secured as a charitable organization. So every donation that folks make to our organization, it's tax. We could provide them with tax receipts. You know, so I'm looking at builders, developers, people that want to come in and say, hey, you know, I want to make this part of my business heritage that I donated towards making this place accessible so that the history of the local Guelph Black community could be understood in a better way.
Mm-hmm.
Just like all other histories, but to be understood in a better way.
Sure. In a good light.
You know, which is, this little light of mine. Yeah.
There's the event on November 5th. Pointed that out.
Yeah.
I'm sure I would have gotten it right on the show notes. But on November 4th, that's the kickoff.
We're gonna kick off the fundraising, ramping it up. We got the black guy in the wheelchair sliding up. We already did you see that guy? We had to darken the guy a little bit because he kind of looked like Bill Cosby. So for our branding and marketing, we just made him a little bit darker, so he's more like a wheelchair moving up.
Right.
So we're gonna do that and see how far we're gonna take this on that night. Started it off with the things.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian Strickland, the drummer who donated, they donated everything 100%.
Huh.
Right, and Adrian Strickland's family, he's a descendant of the Underground Railroad.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's been at my house every week, volunteering his time and, you know, making sure that we have all the events together for that. And by doing that, he's helping us out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and he's an interesting guy because his heritage came from both the Caribbean and from First Nations black people, if you want to call it that way,
right,
or Underground Railroad folks that made it into the Guelph region.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So after November the 4th, is there a plan in terms of where the fundraiser will go next?
Well, after that, we have multiple events happening throughout the Christmas season, and we're going to release that as time comes along, and then into February. You know, January is a dead month. Mm-hmm. But if people want to donate, like one of the best ways to donate to this show is to just buy a ticket. Mm-hmm. Even if you're going to come or not. And you could get the tickets by just sending us a quick email onto the Guelph Black Heritage Facebook page, or, you know, go to the GuelphBlackHeritage.ca website, and or just give us a call. There's numbers there on that website to come and support our organization. And we're looking for volunteers. Mm-hmm. We're looking for every walk of life volunteer to come and just, you know, get this place going again. Mm-hmm. You know, the more the merrier, you know.
And this place does currently serve as a community center.
It's a community center.
And
we call it the Heritage Hall, the HH, the Heritage Hall. And we got the symbol of that lantern, which is the light.
Right.
You know, that brought, you know, the comfort.
Right. Yeah. And this still does occasionally act in the church capacity. There are
rent the church out to a church congregation now, mm-hmm. and we rotate between that. Different organizations use it. I don't want to disclose all of them, but some of them are, yeah, you know, they use it for different groups mm-hmm. that use it as a comfort place, you know, and we provide them with that access and that privacy, mm-hmm. you know, so.
In terms of the future and what you would like to see this space become, I mean, I know you're not the only person who has a say, but I mean, in your own mind's eye, what would you like to see this space become?
I would like to see more quilting. I don't know why I said that. I was just looking at the quilt on the wall, and I have a really good friend.
There's still two walls that don't have quilts.
Yeah. I was thinking, I don't even know how to quilt, but I kind of want to learn, because I like mm-hmm. a lot of the quilting that we have in here is with the little codes right. that was used as a destination. I was working on a play with a friend of mine out of Toronto. Her mom was involved in that. She's white Canadian, fourth mm-hmm. generation, and her mom was close to the Detroit border, and she is doing a play where she brought descendants of the Underground Railroad, and her being the role as a white Canadian, as her house, I think, in in Windsor, mm-hmm. was a huge destination. So we're trying to do stuff where we bring in those histories into the space, having really good events, having more of an educational series mm-hmm. that would attract the younger demographics, so that when we get older and don't have the time, mm-hmm. it's a safe space. You know, and the cultural activities, I'm looking to start a steel pan orchestra in Guelph. And this could be a good space to start that. There's a lot of different things for the future that we could do. Here, they're even talking about doing a carnival, mm-hmm. Caribana-style carnival, because from some of the histories, this place was where people traveled a lot of miles to right. come here to celebrate Emancipation Day, mm-hmm. you know, which is August the 1st. We've always have a tough time finding August the 1st events successful here, because a lot of people go away.
Right.
So we try to do something a little bit earlier, and we're also trying to build some strong links with the Guelph Cemetery. Mm-hmm. Which there's a bunch of really good history there, the guy that runs the cemetery. So we want to try to do some more panel discussions, because the cemetery could be a very important part of understanding some of the family names and doing that kind of research, you know? Sure. Yeah, so it's just about building the availability and accessibility of the space mm-hmm. so that we could do collaborative partnerships with the Guelph Jazz Festival, the Film Festival, the... there's so many different events that could happen here that these organizations are, I don't want to say hogtied, but affiliated to government granting or agencies that require that all spaces that they do have events must be accessible.
Right.
So, you know, like Hillside Festival, this is a non-starter for Hillside Festival at this time until we become accessible. So, right. So I could see us doing collaborations with the Hillside Festival for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, small events, young artists development, a recording studio, we could do some really good, because the acoustics in here is spectacular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did notice that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so that's what we want to do. It's just collaborations. It's the perfect size space, 88 people sitting, 100 people standing. Mm-hmm. You know, like Guelph is just the right size mm-hmm. for a really good event that you said, damn, I missed that one, but it's good. You know, 88 people or 100 people had a great time.
That's right.
Because most good events in Guelph happen with about 100 people.
Absolutely.
Trust me.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of promotions in Guelph. Yeah.
Aside from the trying to make this place accessible and all the things you talked about, I imagine one of the big ones is just outreach and trying to convince people, even non-Black members of the community.
Oh, yeah, totally.
The necessity of keeping that heritage alive, mm-hmm. why that's important to them. So as someone who's become one of the keepers of that heritage,
uh-huh.
why is that so essential to even...
Yeah, well, I mean, even along the lines of Black Lives Matter
mm-hmm.
and about having a place where an organization could have their conversations here. We do have a Canadian culture that still thinks that racism is not out there.
Or that it's gone.
Or that it's gone. I don't know where it's gone. I don't know if they package it into an envelope and send it away. But, you know, there's solid people. Like, I could call a guy's name like Kevin Sutton,
mm-hmm.
who is a guy that I know could do some solid workshops with providing white Canadian people with tools.
Mm-hmm.
on when they experience or hear somebody that make a racial slur or make a racist decision in management or leadership, how they could provide them with tools. Because sometimes people kind of close themselves in
right.
when, as white people, about racism and just hope for the situation to go away.
Right.
And they were like, man, I wish I could say the right things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm thinking workshops along, what do I say when I am exposed to racism when there's nobody really Black there to know it,
yeah.
but the manifestations of those decisions has perjured or devalued an opportunity for a person of color
right.
or a woman of color or whatever
right.
from getting forward. So I think spaces like this is, again, the right size for workshops, organizations, like, let's, you know, any insurance company
mm-hmm.
who is talking and touting as being racially diverse, and we have a few pictures that we show with a token picture of that one Black person that's working in there, could come in here and learn and have some workshops about racial sensitivity.
Right.
You know, because most people just need the tools. What do I say? How do I act? What resources are there for me? You know, and that is going to bring about change. You know.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Let me wrap up by asking if there's one thing you've learned about Black history in Guelph that you think everyone should know, all 121,000 some odd people in Guelph, what would that be?
What I knew about, oh boy, that's a talk, that's, like, yeah, my mind is so multifaceted in terms of, it stumped me. I was going to say, I know that there's a lot of them that left,
mm-hmm.
that should have stayed, mm-hmm. that came, that ran to come here. You know, why? You know, my biggest interest is finding out what did Guelph do right or wrong mm-hmm. to make them move. And it was just really interesting to see the connection that you could use through even Google Maps and see how my brain works. And all of these different things that could connect genealogies right. of people that left. Mm-hmm. So we could actually figure out who's left and who, why they came back, or, you know, so I just find it a really fascinating and interesting thing.
The unanswerable,
yeah, mm-hmm. for sure.
Well, John, I appreciate your time today. I would wrap up by saying go Argos, but I know it's their playoff odds are not looking very good.
No, not looking good. I just got a good jacket. I'm not even a football player. I'm just using some misleading advertising to make people think that I am because I'm a big guy.
Well, it's working for you. But yeah. John Leacock, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for your time, too. And let's make us support and educate our minds.
And once again, that was John Leacock of Guelph Black Heritage Society. If you want to help out with the Rampin' Up campaign or get tickets to the kickoff, you can call them at 519-837-2519, email them at info@guelphblackheritage.ca, or get them online at guelph-black-heritage-society.ticketleap.com/Heritage Hall Fundraiser. And of course, to learn more about Black Heritage Society, go to guelphblackheritage.ca. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics in Sidale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. There is also now a Guelph Politico Facebook page, which you can find at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And of course, please donate to Guelph Politico on Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. And thank you to everyone who has donated and continues to donate to the cause. For all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.